achieving financial freedom and independence is proving to be a more arduous task for the majority of Americans. Approximately 55% of Americans do not utilize a budget to manage their hard-earned income, according to a new survey published by The Penny Hoarder. Meanwhile, another 56% of Americans admit that they don't know how much money they spent last month. And Emily Rassam is on a mission to change just that. She's a senior financial planner for Archer Investment Management and has a true passion for helping her clients make sense of their financial lives and developing plans in order for them to achieve their goals. Prior to her current role, she spent 14 years at investment firms in both New York and North Carolina, assisting families, executives, and institutional retirement clients manage their money and make smart financial decisions. She joined me this week to have a conversation about smart financial planning and putting people on a financial pathway towards success. I'm Kevin McShann. Let's have this conversation. Take a moment to welcome you to the program, and I'm excited to talk to you all about financial planning. Great to be with you today, and thank you so very much for being here.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, and I know that you work with your clients to help them sort of get a clearer picture of their financial goals and dreams, and you help them put together a plan to achieve that. So I'm wondering if you could tell me about all the great work that you do.
Yeah. So the work that I do is as a financial planner is really to help people organize their financial lives. And I like to think of it how, you know, people like to organize their sock drawer or their pantry or different areas of their house. And it just looks so nice when you kind of take everything out and, you know, put it in the right container and put it neatly back on the shelf. And I like to do that with money. And I think that, you know, the biggest thing that we help people with is starting to get that process organized and set clear goals and really have an idea of how to potentially achieve those goals and get on the right path.
Yeah, absolutely. And Emily, I'm curious to ask you as a financial planner, what are your financial non-negotiables? When you work with clients, what are your top three things that you really tell them they shouldn't compromise on if they want financial security and clarity as well?
Yeah, so I think the first one is, I think that people become unhappy when they get outside of their comfort zone on a risk level. And so, you know, I see that when the market is going up, sometimes people feel that they might be more aggressive or they want to invest in things that are outside of their comfort zone, you know, such as cryptocurrencies or high growth stocks. And so, you know, one thing that we try to do is to kind of keep people balanced in the right risk level so that they are, you know, going to remain comfortable when we go through periods like we are now with the market down. And so to me, you know, non-negotiable is somebody has, you know, demonstrated to me that they are a little bit more conservative or moderate, and they all of a sudden see something that's growing quickly and they want to participate in that or stretch their risk level a lot higher. I tend not to do that because I start to get some really anxious phone calls this time when the market's down. And I really don't want people to have to experience that. So that's one. The second thing is, typically what might cause us to find somebody is not a good fit to work with us is if somebody is not interested in, you know, providing all of the details and information to create their financial plan. And so to me, somebody who is a great candidate to work with us and be a client is somebody who is willing to share information about their, you know, cash flow, their budget, their debt. We look at their tax returns, we look at their estate planning documents, we look at all of their various different accounts, and that allows us to build that foundation that we can then make recommendations on. So to me, a non-negotiable is when somebody says, I don't want you to see a part of my financial life, or I don't want you to know what I have, because I don't want to make any kind of recommendations for somebody if I don't have all of the information that I need. And the third one I would say is, you know, somebody who has, you know, really expectations that are unrealistic. And so if somebody is not, you know, doing the work and saving, they expect that the market is going to significantly outperform and get them to their goals. I think that's also, you know, potentially not a good fit and a non-negotiable is somebody who, you know, believes something that to be untrue about the market or taxes or, you know, has expectations. I had a client who told me the world was going to end on a certain date and wanted me to help her, you know, stock up on gold, you know. And so for those different types of things, those are generally going to be some non-negotiables and fits not a good fit for us.
Yeah, Emily, I identify with the second point that you made. As a journalist, I want all the information I can have, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, it helps you to do your job.
Yeah, absolutely. Emily, when you think about the term financial flexibility and achieving it, I'm fascinated to know what comes to mind for you as a financial planner.
Yeah, and so part of that is you have to have some elasticity in your plans, because we know that when we build a financial plan, we're a little bit like weathermen. We know that, you know, we're going to make some kind of projections or predictions. And just like people are seeing the hurricane coming up to Florida, that path changes, you know, by the minute. And so that happens with your financial plan as well. And so, you know, we need to be flexible in what that trajectory might look like and be prepared for different types of outcomes. So just like people who might be outside of the hurricane path in Florida need to prepare for the hurricane, we need to prepare for, you know, different things to change that trajectory along the way. And the other thing I think about with flexibility is what we like to get people to is to a point where they can be work optional. And so to me, that means if somebody creates a plan where they can get to a point where maybe they don't want to retire at that specific point, but we want to try to find that earliest point where work can become optional and they can have a financial plan that allows them to have that type of choice and freedom and flexibility.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also know that you help clients sort of with their financial organization as it relates to putting money in buckets. So I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit more about financial organization and what it means to you to put money in buckets.
Yeah, so I very commonly see a family that has typically a checking account that handles all of their household bills and then one savings account. And that savings account is, you know, doesn't matter what the size is, but if you only have one account, that money might be earmarked for emergencies, for travel, for other purchases that you might have, or if the car breaks down, whatever it might be. And it can be hard to try to understand the right amount of money to have in that one bucket. And so I'm a big fan of having separate buckets of money for separate purposes. And so that concept is called bucketing. And most banks allow you to have multiple savings accounts and label them or nickname them. And so when I log on to my banking app, I can see, you know, an emergency fund and a separate one for car related expenses and gifts and house related things and travel and, you know, all of those different types of buckets. And when we go to make a purchase or we want to purchase something in the future, we can just create a new bucket in our savings account, label it for that specific purchase, and then we can visibly see, you know, how are we doing on track for our goal to fill that bucket to the level that we need it to be. You know, how do we earmark money for these different things? And it also gives you that permission to spend that money. So if you have money specifically set aside for a vacation or to purchase your next vehicle or do something else, then it feels like you can take the money out of that designated bucket for that purpose, and you're not taking away from the rest of your financial goals. So savings accounts are a great place to do bucketing, but also we do that in investment accounts as well. And so a lot of people are commonly familiar with investing in specific retirement accounts. So that's a one bucket, and maybe a different bucket for college savings, but you can have other savings that are meant for other types of future longer term expenses. So we encourage people to do bucketing as well with their taxable brokerage accounts and label those for, you know, this investment might be for a future beach house or might be for, you know, something that is in the future that you might want to potentially utilize.
Yeah, absolutely. And Amy, you know, or Emily, I was curious to ask you about the impact of inflation, you know, because it's all over the news. The cost of everything is going up and up and up. So how do you account as a financial planner when someone comes to you as a client and says, I'm worried about inflation and how it's going to affect my bottom line? So I'm curious, as a financial planner, how do you view the rising cost of inflation and quite simply, everything we buy today is going up and up and up?
Yeah, and this is definitely not a time to have your head in the sand. I know that you know, people are just sometimes just going to the grocery store and saying, I'm just throwing the same things in my cart like I always do and making the same purchases I always am, and you know, not really realizing how much that might be impacting the budget. Right now is a really good time to comb through the budget and see if anything can be modified. And so there's very easy things that you can potentially cut out. If you look at your credit card statement or checking account statement and see if there are any reoccurring subscriptions that can be trimmed out that you might not use anymore. You know, every time we download an app on our phone or subscribe to, you know, a website, something like that, usually they're trying to get us to have some kind of reoccurring payment that we're making to them. And so going through and kind of cutting out anything that you're really not using or don't need, it might be time to try to renegotiate, you know, cable, internet, cell phone type bills and see if there are any new deals or different providers you can switch to. And then it's taking that time to maybe rethink what you're putting in your cart. So many people buy the same things every single week and don't really take that extra moment to do that extra shopping in the store. And so it might be saying, let me look around and see if there's a lower cost brand, or going switching to you know, the generic brand if I don't currently use that. Maybe I'll start to look up some recipes or cook more at home. I know coming out of COVID, a lot of people got into more of a habit of doing DoorDash and having different meal deliveries. So it might be increasing how much you're cooking and, you know, trying to reduce that grocery bill a little bit. But it is definitely time to revisit that budget and tally up and truly see what you are spending. I had that moment in May. My husband and I do a budget meeting every single month where we sit down and take a look at what we've spent the prior month and what's coming up in the next month coming up. And I remember we were getting ready for the budget meeting and I ran downstairs and said, do you realize how much we've spent on groceries this past month? It's significantly more than we have before. And that helped to, you know, just slightly modify our behavior going into the next month to account for that. So it's definitely time to see if there are things that can be trimmed in your budget to help account for the rising prices. As far as, you know, building a longer term financial plan, we've really not adjusted our long term inflation numbers in planning. We use, you know, long term CPI numbers that date back to 1917. So we use 3.2% as the long term inflation number. You know, a year or a couple of years of higher inflation, you know, might bump that average a little bit overall. But we think that people who are retiring in, you know, decades or will retire over a series of decades in retirement, I wouldn't expect that these prices would remain this high during that entire time. We know that inflation, you know, is cyclical and would come back to some kind of average.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Emily, I'm going to share just a little bit about myself. So I'm 33 currently, and I'm already saving for retirement because I believe the earlier you begin to save, the better. So tell me, what are your keys to anyone that wants to save for retirement, maybe younger than may recommend in saving for retirement? So what's the key for saving for a successful financial retirement?
Yeah, great question. So I think that a very powerful tool that can help motivate somebody to save is by seeing that bigger picture. And so if people are saving in a 401k plan through work, or have some kind of an IRA type of an account through an online provider, they all have different types of retirement plan calculators. And I think it's really powerful to see, you know, just by saving, you know, $25, $50, $100 a week, $200, $500 a week, whatever you can, over a long period of time, to see what that impact is. I'll never forget sitting in a finance class in college, and we were given the task of typing in some equations in our calculator, our financial calculator, for time value of money, which just shows what the compounding of money does over time. And once you start to kind of see, oh my gosh, this, you know, small investment that I'm making just repeatedly over a long period of time has this huge end result, I think that that's just very powerful to know and can keep you motivated. Because sometimes people think, well, I don't know that saving this small amount really is going to make a difference, or I'm going to save more later. But knowing what that looks like long-term can be motivating. So I'd recommend that people go out onto those calculators and see that. Start as early as possible and just save, you know, what you can and what you can afford. But also, as you get raises, that's the perfect time to be increasing a savings rate. So sign up for what you can afford, you know, at work, and at least try to maximize the match that you're receiving if you have one. But every year when you get that raise, I want you to have that thought in your head to say, okay, they're providing me with a 2%, 3% or 4% raise. I'm going to increase my retirement savings by 1% at that time. And so it's a win-win. You still get more in your take-home pay, and you're saving a little bit more. And you'll be very surprised over time by how much more your savings level will be by increasing it just a little bit each year.
Yeah, absolutely. And Emily, I know that you're a new mom, so congratulations on that. And I'm curious to also ask you about having children from a financial perspective, because, you know, having kids today isn't cheap, as I'm sure you know, and saving for their college is something, when you have kids, you should think about immediately. So I'm curious to ask you about being a newlywed and new parent at the same time from a financial perspective. What are some things people should be thinking about from a financial perspective before they either get married or have children?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great question. So I'll tackle the baby part and then we'll go to the marriage part. So when having a baby, it's, you know, researching what the potential costs are going to be and being flexible with that. You know, people might think that they're going to, you know, breastfeed but end up needing formula, or cloth diaper but end up using diapers. And so build into the budget kind of the top costs that it might be, you know, for that potential baby. You want to think about, you know, some costs ahead of time. So as you are, you know, pregnant, it might be, you know, costs of maternity clothes, you know, costs of buying things, you know, to get ready for the baby, to prepare for the nursery. And so back to the buckets of money, you know, when we were preparing and deciding that we were going to grow our family, you know, we built a separate savings account, and it's just labeled baby savings. And we saved in that bucket knowing that we were going to be making different kinds of purchases. And we were very blessed to have gifts from different family members and friends that were given to us. But there were definitely a lot of things that we needed to buy. There are also costs typically associated with the delivery. I know not in Canada necessarily, but in the U.S., any of your U.S. listeners know that typically there's some costs associated with that delivery. So you want to have a clear understanding and expectation of what those would be. I think at the end of the day, we ended up paying $7,000 to the hospital and anesthesiologist. That was our out-of-pocket costs for that. So preparing for those couple of costs and then building into your budget, you know, the ongoing monthly costs of then having that baby in your home and what that might be. Some people might also prepare for, you know, some unpaid maternity leave. Again, in the U.S., I'll have to base that on, is that you might decide to have a period of time where you are unpaid. And so allocating some additional savings ahead of time for that time period. So those are all important things to potentially think about and have conversations with your partner about. is how you want to potentially handle that time. Once the baby is here, you can start saving into a college account for that child. And there are different types of calculators that can either say, you know, if you want a local university or a university elsewhere abroad or in a different state, if you're in the US, you can plug in some different metrics that might price out what that future cost would be. And you can even actually pick a specific school. So if you want to make that decision for your infant about what potential school that they might be going to in the future, you can plug that into a calculator and it'll reverse back and tell you how much to save per month if you want to fund whatever portion of their education. You can decide if you want to pay 100% of their college costs, if you want to be covering 50% of their costs or 25% of their costs. You plug those different types of things into a financial calculator, and there are plenty online that are available, and that will help you determine the amount. Like anything, it's a lot easier to save over those 18 or 22 years for that college education than trying to figure it out and cash flow it at the time that it comes. So that'll help you to determine an amount. When it comes to kind of combining your life with somebody financially, you want to be clear about what all of your different goals are and what your priorities are with money. And so there are a lot of great conversations that should be had while you are in that pre-marriage stage about, you know, ideally what you want your life to look like and, you know, how you handle finances now, how you handle budgeting, how you handle investments. And, you know, you want to come to a point where you are combining at least a portion of your finances and doing some planning together. So a lot of households that I work with will have, you know, their common household expenses and joint expenses kind of coming out of one joint checking account, and very commonly maybe having a separate account each. So each partner has their own specific, you know, fund money or separate money that they just keep outside of the normal budget to be able to do whatever they want with, because it's also important when you combine your finances not to scrutinize each other's purchases. So, you know, I don't care if my husband wanted to, you know, stop and get fast food on the way home or, you know, make a specific purchase. You know, he just does that out of his separate bucket. And that's where all my Amazon purchases come out of is mine. And so just having, you know, a decision about how to handle those joint finances and then giving yourself each your own kind of separate bucket to handle the things that come up.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Emily, I'm also curious to ask you about, you know, young people and planning for a financial future, because a lot of young people don't have a savings account. And when they go through life, they realize how important that is. So talk to me about the importance of educating young people on the benefits of a savings account.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so by building a savings account, the very first type of savings account you should have is an emergency fund. And it's really to help with anything that comes up that's unexpected. And that can be a job loss. If you have an emergency fund that's built up and you've got cash built up and savings built up in that, that gives you so much more flexibility in life, because you don't have to just rush and take the very first job that comes up, you know, right after you've lost a job or chosen to leave a job. That gives you some buffer time to kind of reassess and think about where you want to be and what you want to do. And it also allows you to stay out of debt. And so, you know, if you have emergency fund savings and something happens to your vehicle, or you have a medical emergency, or you have, you know, something that you need to repair or do, something happens to your home, you need to move suddenly, you know, any of those types of things, you know, it becomes an inconvenience, but not a financial emergency for you to have that bucket built up. And so that does build some more flexibility into your life. The better that you can be about having that savings built up in a healthy amount, for most households, that's 3 to 6 months worth of your monthly expenses is the appropriate amount to keep in that bucket. You might want to have more if you have exposures such as you own real estate, if you have rental properties, or, you know, multiple vehicles, or you have job instability, or, you know, unstable pay where maybe your pay might fluctuate over time. Having additional savings will just help to smooth out those time periods and buffer and allow you to, you know, pivot and make adjustments as needed. And so I would definitely work towards slowly building that up. The very best way to do that is to, every single time you get paid, just shift a little bit into savings. And so set up an amount that works for you. And there's power in saving a little bit of money over a long period of time. So build what you can in that savings bucket before you move on to, you know, other types of purchases or even excess retirement savings or college education savings. That emergency fund is really the most important vehicle to have.
Yeah, and one thing we should mention is that you can always increase the amount you save as you go throughout your career and get promoted, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And so that is actually something I'm seeing with, you know, inflation and costs going up, is that not everybody has necessarily adjusted what their emergency fund should be. And so if you see that your monthly expenses keep growing, that also means that you need to have more cash buffer. So we very often have lifestyle creep, where the more we make, the more we tend to spend. But if we've decided our emergency fund threshold years ago, that might not be sufficient any longer. So it's a good time to reassess how much to have in that buffer bucket. And again, you know, keeping that separate from other goals. Your emergency fund shouldn't cover, you know, gifts during the holidays. Those aren't a surprise. You know, we know that that comes up every single year. And we know that, you know, if you plan for a vacation, that should be saved separately. That shouldn't come out of your emergency fund. So that's why I like to have those different buckets as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And you had mentioned earlier about, just briefly about the effects of COVID, but I'm wondering, as a financial planner, how have you viewed the effect of COVID and helping your clients sort of rebuild their financial lives after COVID?
Yeah, and so COVID impacted people in a lot of different ways. And so it's interesting because there are some industries where, you know, we saw big wage growth. A lot of our clients work in the tech industry. So I actually saw for a lot of our clients, you know, their jobs were pretty secure because tech industry still continued to do well. There was still wage growth in those areas. And so, you know, largely unaffected. But on the other side of it, you know, I had small business owners that we work with, or, you know, other types of professionals where their industry slowed down significantly. And so, you know, those different time periods sometimes allow you to, you know, reassess and figure out, you know, how can I pivot? You know, especially if you're a small business owner, and you're going through a time period where maybe you're not seeing the foot traffic that you did before, or, you know, your good or service is no longer needed. It's being able to, you know, pivot and diversify what you're potentially doing. And so our clients that made it out of COVID well are ones that adapted to it. I had a restaurant owner client who, you know, immediately changed his restaurant to allow for more outdoor seating and more takeout. And he had a very good year. And I have other clients that were in that position that just said, well, it's COVID. I'm going to just kind of shut down for a long period of time and hope that everything gets better soon. And so there's different mentality that you might have to say, you know, how you set out and what you planned on potentially doing might need to change. And we always need to be thinking about that, because there are, you know, so many different factors out there that can impact all of our different businesses. And, you know, there's, you know, geopolitical risk or a changing environment with inflation or interest rates. You know, there are new emerging technologies every year that kind of slow down old ones. And so, you know, our ability to be flexible and to pivot is important. And also our ability to have that emergency savings, you know, if we lose our job or lose, you know, a stream of revenue, thinking about how do we, you know, how do we make the most of this, and what are some areas to potentially go into? My husband in June of 2020 pivoted out of his industry, kind of seeing what was going on. He took a tech coding boot camp and pivoted into the technology world at the end of 2020. And so it's because we had an emergency fund, we had the ability to have him take that time off of work and do that. And it's worked out well. And he loves where he is right now. And so having that buffer in your life allows you to potentially make those shifts and changes as needed. And having some room in your budget every single month allows you to absorb, you know, other changes that are happening with costs or supply shortages or changes that you might need to make.
Yeah, absolutely. It's important to be nimble in all aspects of life, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So by just doing a little bit of financial planning, it really doesn't take a lot of time. You know, my husband and I sit down every month, but, you know, we're just spending a few minutes going over our goals and where we are and what's changed. And, you know, even just doing that for 30 minutes a month, you know, we're able to see where we are and have that conversation, have that connection, and have a better understanding of what's happening in our world. So I highly recommend, if you're planning on your own, plan that time for yourself, set aside that time, schedule it on your calendar, just to sit down and assess, you know, what happened in the last month and what's about to happen in this upcoming month and any changes I need to make or things I need to do. If you're planning with a partner, having that meeting together and just setting it. Ours is the last Sunday of every month and we stick to it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's important to stick to goals if you make them, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
And one of the things that we have in common, Emily, is the fact that we like to give back and volunteer. And I know that you currently volunteer for an organization called Try It for Life, where you help women of all ages train for triathlons. You also do some work with the YMCA there in Charlotte. So tell me about the work that you do from a volunteer perspective and why it's so important to you.
Yeah. So, I love being out in the community and connecting. And I think especially now that I work from home, I very much value the time that I get to get out there. Try It for Life is an organization that helps women of all ages and sizes complete their first triathlon. I did my first triathlon in 2014, and it just made me feel so empowered that I could do that. And I really came to enjoy doing some of those workouts together with other people. And I wanted to, in my experience of doing several triathlons after that, help women who might feel that they are not in the right shape or not the right size or too slow or however they might feel about themselves, gain that courage, gain those skills, and have a community of people that they can grow their athletic abilities with. And so, I've done a lot of those events. I'm not fast at all. And it was a big learning experience for me to just enjoy the time and, enjoy my pace and, not feel like I needed to, be faster or win the race. And so that's what I enjoy about that is it's a 3-month program that we do. And so a lot of my volunteering is kind of patterned throughout the year where I do the Try It for Life for a few months. And then I'm involved in the YMCA programs, mostly in the summer with the Y Readers program. And in the fall, then I can focus on some other types of ways of giving back. And tonight, for example, I'm going to a local college and I'm helping some of the college students with their networking skills. And I do etiquette dinners and things like that at the local colleges in the fall. So it's just fun to have some different groups that I volunteer with and to be out in the public.
Yeah, I always tell people that life is a constant game of networking and making authentic human connections makes the difference, doesn't it?
It absolutely does, yeah.
And Emily, I'm curious, they tell me in your downtime that you like hiking, reading, and traveling and walking your dog. So when you're not in the office, what do you like to do for fun?
Yeah, so we are dog park people. We've got a dog park around the corner. And that's actually my husband and I 8 years ago met at a dog park. So our two dogs we would go regularly with. And so we love fresh air. We love getting out in nature. And it's just a fun experience to bring our dogs along with us. So we like to check out all of the different trails in Charlotte, North Carolina, where we live. We take our baby with us now, which is fun. He's not been on any long or big hikes yet. We haven't taken him up a mountain or anything. But as he gets bigger and, has more patience for those types of events, that's what we hope to do. Because it's just so mentally refreshing to be just out in the trees and, that fresh air. And so I think that's really important to stay connected with.
Yeah, absolutely. And, Emily, I'm also fascinated to ask you how you view the concept of inclusion from a financial perspective. Before we started today, I shared with you that I have a disability, and I'm curious because I do a lot of work with businesses to hire folks with disabilities. And from a financial perspective, I'm curious to get your perspective on the impact of giving folks with disabilities a job, because next month is National Disability Employment Awareness Month. So I'm curious to get your thoughts on the financial impact of infusing individuals with disabilities into the workforce.
Yeah, so I think that there are, a lot of wonderful opportunities out there in all different fields. I think that technology has really improved, accessibility in the financial world and, adjacent industries as well. And so there are so many different opportunities, especially with technology to allow for people who need different types of accommodations to access either the tools that they need for their own first personal financial planning or to gain employment in this industry. So I think that's improved quite a bit. And the nice, I think, you hate to ever say that there's anything positive that comes out of COVID, but I think that that's really advanced a lot of the technology in our space and tools that are available, along those ways.
Yeah, absolutely. And Emily, my final question for you today is how, when you look at your personal and professional legacy, how do you think you want that to be defined?
Let's see. So I think that as far as, how do I want, what do I want my legacy to be in this world is, I want to have an impact on, how people view, budgeting and planning and making it feel not daunting, but exciting and a tool to help them achieve their goals and achieve what they want to in life and be intentional with money. And so I think that, I have all of these one-on-one interactions with people, all day, every week, every month. And my goal is to just help people, enjoy this process and set those goals and build that trajectory. And I'd like to think that, over the last 15 years, all of these little seeds that I've planted will turn into people who are, financially healthy and happy and comfortable and able to hit the goals that they want to achieve.
Yeah, absolutely. And finally, tell me if people want to get connected with you, what's the best way they can do that?
Yeah, so I think the social that I'm the most active on is LinkedIn. So if you find me, Emily Rassam on LinkedIn, or on our website, which is archerim.com. So archerim.com. And we have, different videos and blogs out there on our website, but we also have an area to book a consultation. And so no pressure, no cost, to set up a 15-minute call with me.
Well, fabulous. Emily, I really enjoyed our conversation about financial diversification and financial planning today. Your work in the space and time on my behalf is most appreciated, and I want to thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed being your guest.